Post on social media, the centre's executive director, Richard Grinnell, said it was the centre's decision to sever ties with the opera company in order to, quote, have the flexibility and funds to bring in operas from around the world. Chloe Veltman, NPR News.
And I'm Dwahli Saikautal, NPR News, from New York City.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Made In Cookware. Made In Cookware is crafted by chefs for chefs and designed for restaurants and home kitchens around the world. Their cookware can be found at madeincookware.com. This is NPR.
It's a beautifully snow-frosted morning here on the Augustana College campus. And friends, you're just in time for a conversation with this week's guest, Marcy Mendenhall, CEO of SAL Community Services. I'm Kai Swanson. I hope you'll join us here on WVIK for Local Radio as it's meant to be brewed. Right here on Saturday Morning Live, portions recorded. Well, Marcy, this is one of those shows I really look forward to because there are folks that I have known long enough that I have no recollection of how I first met them. But we'll get into that at some point along the way. Marcy, thanks for taking some time to be with us this morning.
Thanks, Kai. I'm excited to be here. And that calliope music just gets me going. I think I'm on a merry-go-round. I think today's conversation is going to be fabulous.
Oh, you're on a merry-go-round. We never know where you get off here. We're just going to go round and round, and that's quite all right. But it has been fun, though, watching your career in this community. You've done so many things for our community. But I want to start way, 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 way back. Did you grow up around these parts?
I did. I grew up in Eldridge. My dad, 91 years old, is still living in the same house in Eldridge that they brought me home in the hospital.
Oh, isn't that great?
Isn't that fabulous? So I grew up and went to North Scott, started college in Western, finished at the University of Dubuque, went to St. Ambrose and received my master's in social work.
All right.
Yeah. And so decided at that point, I went to the University of Dubuque and got this crazy idea that I wanted to fly planes. So my undergraduate is in aviation operations.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, well, it actually makes you have to fly airplanes. And then when I graduated, I was like, okay, what am I really going to do with this? At that point, fell in love and decided not to go down that point and went back to doing some retail and was like, what am I going to do? And was like, okay, this is like a pause. And then went back to get my master's and in social work and became a therapist.
This is really fascinating to me because, yes, it is. And I'm going to tell you why. In the 70s, back when this town was just rolling in money, Rock Island High School had a class in aviation and aeronautics.
No way.
Absolutely. And I took that class with Mr. Ostrom because I was fascinated by it all. In fact, I was like 15 years old when I happened to be on a flight by Lufthansa, and they had a flight attendant who happened to be male.
Wow.
And growing up as I did in the 70s, I thought, well, flight attendants, they're only supposed to be female, you know, Ozark and Continent, all this kind of stuff. And I thought, no, this is a career path. So that's what I really thought I would love to do, is to be a flight attendant. So, and I thought I better learn about aviation, aeronautics, all this kind of stuff. And so this isn't crazy at all. I'm really jamming on this kind of thing. But I do want to even peel back further. Eldridge is a great town.
Isn't it, though?
It is, and it's got great old houses besides the one that you grew up in.
Yeah.
What were some of the stuff you guys did for fun up that way?
Well, we lived on the outskirts of town.
Okay, okay.
And my parents had a swimming pool,
which
was fabulous.
So were the most popular kids in town.
We were, and my summer job was to teach swimming lessons. So for 10 to 12 years, that's what was my summer job. And so I did that with my brother. And I think there's not probably now there's less people who come up to me once a month and say, you taught me swimming lessons, but
really?
I really taught north of Scott County a majority of people how to teach swimming lessons. That was my claim to fame for a very long time. My kids were like, what are you, did you teach this person swimming lessons? Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Okay. So we are thinking about aviation. What were some of the things that I'm always fascinated by the little gentle nudges that we often don't even recognize at the time, but when we look back, it was a whisper or just a slight nudge in a different direction. What were some of those for you when aviation didn't seem like that was going to be the way you go?
Well, what really brought me first into aviation was I really appreciated Amelia Earhart. She was just such an inspiration. And I think when I decided aviation wasn't going to be the path, it was like, what am I going to do? I was in knowing that I was going to get a divorce. I had two young kids. Mm. What was going to be this next path for me that was going to be suitable for this new family that I was going to be a single mom and doing? And that's when School of Social Work opened up. They had a part-time program. I was going to be able to do that as a single mom. And I always knew I liked children. I was good with working with people like you. People, I'm able to talk to people and listen and have a way with people and connecting with people on different levels.
Hmm.
And so I thought, okay, I can do this. I can get paid. And that started me on a different pathway.
Mm-hmm.
Was able to graduate. My first job was at Vera French and started the school-based therapy program.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was, again, such a wonderful opportunity to be at Vera French and start the school-based therapy, where they really brought mental health therapy out of Vera French proper of the building. I was at Buchanan and Fillmore School. And we were able just to really break down barriers. And again, that was mid-90s and early 2000s. And that's where, you know, we start breaking down the paths and the barriers around mental health for children and getting that access, increasing that access.
I don't want to go on too much of a tangent here, but how are we doing in that aspect? In some ways, I see the young people that are coming to college, and they are much more well-versed and comfortable talking about issues related to mental health. And then I worry sometimes about access. What's your read on that?
We need more access.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have more acuity. We have more awareness about it, but we still need more providers. We still need to have more people who are able to get medication, but also get practitioners in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
We just received a grant from BetterHealth for our skip-along programs to put mental health therapists in our skip programs.
Mm-hmm.
So that we're going to have our access even earlier on.
Oh, we're going to get into that because I'm a big fan, as I think you know.
Absolutely.
The skip programs. But I do want to talk more about this pull that you felt. And I really love it because a lot of times our path is set by factors that are beyond ourselves. And you had things to take care of, right? And so that's definitely valid. But that attraction then to the social work. There's a couple of things that I don't think I could do and remain happy. One is have a daily commute of more than 20 minutes. I'm not one of those people who, I've got great friends in Chicago and the Twin Cities and elsewhere. I can't commute. It takes me 20 minutes to walk to work, and that's not commuting. That's just joy, right? The other thing is I would have a hard time at a job where at the end of a succession of days, I thought, what did I do?
Mm-hmm.
And anything I've ever had a chance to do in social services, mostly volunteer, when you're done with your shift or whatever, your engagement, you feel like you've done something. Right. Is that part of it for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think about in social work, we think about macro, meso, and micro work.
Okay.
You know, so you think about, what am I doing for the child? What am I doing maybe for the school? What am I thinking about for the system, for those, like the bigger policy work? And so, because it's super it can be super frustrating to say, oh, I didn't do anything today, because it can be so overwhelming. That work can be so overwhelming. But if you can truncate it into one of those systems of how you're making micro progressions in that work, then it's less frustrating.
Tell me that middle one again. Was it mezzo?
Mezzo.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah. I've not heard that one before.
Because then you're able to do that progression and forward.
Right.
And because otherwise it becomes so overwhelming. It's like, how do you eat an elephant? A bite at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And so when you think about either an early childhood or mental health, it's like, how are we going to see progress in this child and this family? And when they come with multiple needs or multiple issues, it can be like overwhelming. But when we break it down into small goals, and those small goals into small goals, mm-hmm. then we can see the whole trajectory and how to get out.
Right.
And then it's more palatable and more tangible for yourself as the practitioner, but also then for the family as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And extra points to anyone who caught my unintentional Kevin Kline Fish Called Wanda reference to what was that middle part, but I did want to know what that was. That was, I really did. That was very, very fascinating. And it is true, because it does kind of bridge those things together. And there's that old hackneyed phrase about the forest and the trees, and you've got to kind of exist in both. And also the notion about an elephant. A great mentor of mine used to describe that much more colorfully. He said, if you're up to your hindquarter in alligators, you take them one at a time.
Right.
That's how you do that. Okay. So tell me about the journey to SAL, because you've had some really cool engagements. So you mentioned the one about the school-based program.
Yeah.
Then what was the next chapter?
I went to Scott County Kids,
uh-huh.
which was a great innovative program that was a 28E, which is a governmental entity within Scott County, that took DHS money. It also took health funds as well, that looked at how kids were in the DHS system and how to have safe entry from, but also how to have exit from as well. So mm-hmm. we were able to look at that. It was called decategorization, but also had early childhood funds as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so then we created programs around those to programming. And then it just looked at how to do effective community engagement as well. So it was really interesting to do, again, that macro high level,
mm-hmm.
but also do programming about how to integrate those programs so that they're helpful for those families.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that, again, you get that stratification about, you know, where does the work really matter?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, because you need that lens and that sphere to make sure that what decisions are being made are being most effective at that 35,000 foot level, at that higher level, but also what's being impactful for the families.
Right. That whole notion of ROI beyond financial data is I think we're in peril in part right now, because we're not thinking about that. We're not thinking about the consequences of actions that are being taken at a policy level now, mm-hmm. and where that leads to. And I'm curious, because I know we're getting into child development here. Any other stops before we get to SAL?
No, then I went.
That's right, what I thought. Okay.
You got it.
That's what I was, but I've been thinking a lot this week about elementary age literacy.
Yes.
There's an opportunity that's been coming through the Rock Island County NAACP that we're just starting to explore. But on the one hand, I love me some Dolly Parton. Just yes. love her and the programs that she has done and putting books in the hands of kids. But I think from an individual perspective, I don't see a great ROI. It makes me feel good if I made a donation that puts a book in a kid's hands. But we need to get far more into the macro here, right?
Absolutely.
And we need to be talking about guided reading in small groups. I was also talking with Dan McNeil, I think a common friend of ours, mutual friend. And he says the most effective way to do it, you need a trained educator, you need a small group, and you need a good book.
Right, right, right.
Right? And so it's not just getting the book in the hands, though that is still important. We have to keep donating books and giving them to kids by all means. And then added to that, though, is there's got to be something that happens before third grade. A lot of people talk about third grade literacy, but we need to go before even school enrollment. And that's where things like SAL Community Services come along.
Absolutely.
So I want to start morphing into that a little bit now. For someone who is not familiar with SAL and SCIP and all that sort of thing, tell us about it.
You bet. So SAL started back in 1970, started in a church basement. Most everybody would know us as Skip Along.
Mm-hmm.
So started there, early care and education, and then we have morphed into SAL, which has now Skip Along. And within Skip Along, we have Early Head Start, we have home visiting programs, we have Prevention Initiative, we have Preschool for All, and we also have our federal program, Early Head Start.
Mm.
So all of those programs scaffold our kiddos in ways that we know that we want to have those be successful. And our Skip Along programs are in Milan, Rock Island, Moline, and Davenport.
Mm-hmm.
And that section right there serves about 700 kiddos between our Skip Along campuses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then we have our resource and referral programs, which serve about 17 counties in central and western central Illinois.
Okay.
And that would be anybody who is looking for early care and education or wants assistance in helping to pay for that here in Moline, over to Peoria, and down to Macomb. So if you are saying, hey, I've just had a baby, or I am looking for childcare, but I don't know how to pay for it, you would just call our offices and then we would help you sort that out. Whether that is, like I said, if you're looking for childcare or just searching of how to pay for it,
mm-hmm.
that's all supported through Department of Human Services.
Now, there have to have been some really major milestones between a church basement and the more comprehensive organization that you are today. When you look back over the history of SAL, what would some of those have been?
Oh my gosh. I would say, well, just over the course of time would be, you know, Lori Walker, my predecessor, if you remember Lori.
Oh, do I know her? I think my father married Lori and her spouse. I may be wrong, but I'm getting older. But I think yeah, the connection goes back a ways.
Well, Lori is a graduate of Augie.
Yep.
And I know that she has great honor and love and respect for the college. Yeah, so it was just for her tenacity for 45 years of just, you know, early care and education is not babysitting.
Mm-hmm.
It's not daycare.
Mm-hmm.
It is what we truly believe today and how it's grown. It's an economic driver.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have children in high quality seats so that parents can go to work.
Mm-hmm.
It's a two generational approach to economics.
Mm-hmm.
So people can see it as, you know, we want the kiddos in our spaces so that we can get them prepared for kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
We want the parents to be at jobs so that they can be at work,
mm-hmm.
thoughtfully, mindfully there. We're the subject matter experts,
mm-hmm.
to get the students ready, but then the parents can be at work.
And I got to make a disclaimer here. I have very intimate awareness of this program, thanks to three little people named Emma, Alex, and Lucas.
Woo-woo.
But I tell you what, just watching them go through, these are my grandkids, from their first day to their last day, and then be ready for elementary school, where they all are now.
Right.
You don't have to sell me on it. What is my concern, though, is that we're not able to do this for enough people.
Right.
And it's great that Skip is across the Quad Cities. It's not just a one and done in an affluent community, where I see that in other places around the America, but you're doing really important things in every corner of the Quad Cities.
Yeah. And I think the limitation is the true cost of care is not covered
mm-hmm.
by what parents can afford.
Exactly. You know, right? Yeah.
Right.
Well, I see that, though, with family and close friends in other parts of the country. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you would pay for it,
right.
unless you have a sort of a 1% type income,
right.
which most people who are of parenting age don't have.
Right.
It's crazy.
Right. And we're fortunate as a nonprofit to have other grants that we pull. You know, we offer health insurance to our staff. We offer 401k.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we do the investment back into our staff to make sure that our staff are well cared for, and we have paid holidays and those pieces. But there's other, you know, there's just the cost of doing business to make sure that the children are getting what they need to align with best practices, which is a lot.
It is.
And we want to make sure that best practices are there around just the materials and the teacher's education, because what we have right now in the Quad Cities, both in, we're the first, in Skipalong and Davenport, we're the first center in Iowa that has an apprenticeship program.
Ah.
So we feel like the workforce, we want to make sure we have a high quality workforce.
Right.
So we have been designated to have the apprenticeship program in Iowa. And then we also have one of four in Illinois that have an apprenticeship program. So we're just trying to make sure that we are building our next workforce, because people hear early care and education, so that's not a well-paying field, and we're trying to change that concept.
Right.
That it is a profession, not just something that is, oh, I'm going to dip in here because I can do this. We see it as a career pathway.
Well, and that's critically important, right? And we see this in the news and around the country. As you said, this is not about babysitting,
right.
but communities and states where they think that is all it's about. That's not going to work,
right?
I'm curious to see how this New Mexico experiment works out over time. But before we go too much further, and I hope you'll indulge me, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but one of the things that I always found so flipping adorable about your children's programming is that each class has the name of a fuzzy, cute little animal. Could you share some of those names for us? I think it's adorable.
Like the ladybugs and
bunnies.
Bunnies, front bunnies, back bunnies. Oh, we have, I'm trying to remember.
Dragonflies. Oh, the pride of becoming a dragonfly.
Yes.
Among my grandkids, because
well, they were just like,
they're just majestic now. They have arrived. it's just a cute little aside, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but that was just too much. But what I'm getting at is it really is that the difference maker is when we see it as preparation for education.
Right.
And the education as preparation for citizenship. Now, that's been eroded and assaulted at a variety of different levels. And when we're going to have a little break here in a minute, we'll come back and talk about some of the things you're doing in Rock Island. But, you know, I don't know if in the course of your career, you've seen this sort of ebb and flow of the politicization of early childhood.
Mm-hmm. So we really think about, we have 2,000 days when a child is born till they go to kindergarten. So you have 2,000 days, and we take those 2,000 days very seriously about, we have a lot of pressure on us to care and educate that child to make sure they are ready to leave us and to become well-educated, cared for, they're able to self-regulate and to get and to enter kindergarten ready to go. As you said, it's becoming more politicized. We know that we want to take, we are apolitical. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that the children come first, families come first. They're getting what they need from a education level, making sure that they understand that they have what they need from a reading, math, social, emotional level.
Well, it's just getting good, so stay tuned, friends. Marcy Mendenhall is my guest. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Saturday Morning Live, portions recorded on your public radio station, WVIK.
I'm Judy McKinley from Coin Center. I get my morning news and my Saturday night jazz on WVIK, my national public radio station.
Hey, hey, it's Brittany Luce from NPR's It's Been a Minute. I know you rely on NPR and this station for the latest news you need to know, but it's giving so much more for your body.
These movement breaks work.
And soul.
My mind just gets to float to somewhere else.
Please help us keep this head-to-toe public service freely available to everyone by making your donation today. Here's how.
Please visit WVIK.org and simply click the donate button.
I'm Peter Sagal. On this weekend's Wait, Wait, we'll talk about the invasion of Venezuela, or maybe Greenland, or possibly Canada. He's got a couple of days yet. Join us for the news quiz from NPR.
Saturdays at 11 a.m. on WVIK.
And we hope you'll join us for that. That's coming up in just a little bit. But right now, we want you to enjoy my guest, Marcy Mendenhall, CEO of SAL Community Services. We were talking about all kinds of interesting things that are going into that that setup. We do want to let you know, by the way, you're listening to Saturday Morning Live, portions recorded on WVIK. Right now, 33 degrees in the Quad Cities, 32 degrees in Dubuque. If you're still experiencing any snowflakes, those should be wrapping up here pretty quickly. But we're talking about this notion of childcare and education in a policy sort of a sense. But you guys are always pushing things forward. So if you don't mind, and by the way, a listener's note, yes, we're going to have Rock Island Lines. We're making a few changes to the program. That's coming up. Bear with us. We'll have Doc Tweet here before you know it. But Marcy Mendenhall, you guys are doing some amazing things in Rock Island. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
You bet. We are building a new campus. Our current campus in Rock Island has outlived its life cycle. So we are building a new campus in partnership with Friendship Manor. So first, it's going to be this beautiful state-of-the-art 32,000 square foot building, catty corner. It's going to be on 11th Street, catty corner from Friendship Manor. So beautiful new building. It's going to have 12 classrooms, going to serve 192 kids, which is about 25% more kiddos that we've served before. 39 new teachers are going to be joining us. It's just beautiful, state of the art, new windows. But that's the first piece. Then the second piece is we're going to do some innovative programming. So I mentioned Friendship Manor. So Friendship Manor is going to be a partner with us, and we're going to do intergenerational child care programming. Mm-hmm. And that really means we think about it in with the senior community that Friendship Manor serves. We have a certain sect of people who will come over who might just want to volunteer. Mm-hmm. So we think about quality of life. There might be a group of seniors who want to just come over and volunteer in our kitchen or volunteer in our classrooms, because we'll be servicing children between ages 6 weeks to 12 years old. Mm. So they just might want to come over and hang out with our school age kids, or might hang out in the office. There might be a group of people who want to share a special skill like knitting or quilting, or volunteer, just want to come in and do that piece. But there is going to be a piece, there's going to be a group of people who are going to be at the same developmental age as some of our kiddos.
Right.
So this is where that intergenerational piece comes in. And so we're going to be doing curriculum on a daily basis with Friendship Friendship Manor people.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Who will be working together, who will be doing arts, crafts, math, parachute, that are going to be working with our kids on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so what we really see about intergenerational is that development, that relationship, learning from each other. We really want to see that that groove of relationships, that's mm-hmm. learning from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because our 2, 3, 4, and 5-year-olds are bringing such joy to our teachers and each other. We want to bring that same energy to the elder community. And the elder community has still so much more to give at that age. And we really feel that this intersectionality can benefit everybody.
I'm excited by this for a lot of reasons, and one at a very personal level is my mother's last year or so was in skilled care at Friendship Manor, and I would visit her never as much as she wanted, but usually once a day, come over there because it's very close to our house. And the one thing that was always a little bit distressing were those folks that just never seemed to have any visitors. And that's just the case. And I'm not, every family's different, right? And there are reasons for that. But this would, I think, kind of address that sort of thing in getting people outside of each other. I'm also a firm believer in the old observation that the opposite of mental illness is community.
Correct.
And so anything we can do there. there. But historically, this called to mind the college used to have a program called Generations that its campus ministries ran, where through, and I think the English department, and students would go and get to know people who were still very independent,
right?
And I'll never forget, there was, this is about 1988 or 89, somewhere in the late 80s, there was a junior from Thousand Oaks, California, who came back and told me, I met the most interesting fella. His name is Conrad Bergendorf. Well, this guy had been the president of Augustana from 1935 until 1962. He was almost 100 years old.
Oh my
goodness. He did wind up living to be 100. And here's this you know, junior, 19, 20, 21-year-old person who gets to meet such a storied person. And every person at Friendship Banner has a great story
to
share.
Absolutely.
But I see this, and as it's, I think we become more full the more open the channels are for us to give something, and not necessarily monetarily, but just to be able to share something. So I'm really excited about this.
Exactly. Ted Pappas, the CEO of Friendship Manor, will say that their community needs pets, plants, and children for their better quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
We know for our kiddos, we want the least amount of transitions and the more language. Mm-hmm. So we really just think as we pull these two concepts together that our children who are... The children that we serve are majority of them are, their parents are living and working in poverty. So they have a lot more transitions in their life. So we really want to provide more stability.
Wow.
And so we believe that we have these more adults who are going to bring more language to them and more exposure, that we're really going to have some real change within the language exposure. And that's why, you know, once we get done with the building and that piece, we want to do some research on this to see how quality of life changes within the Friendship Manor, but also how language skills are changed within our kiddos and how does that change the exposure and the stability for our kids as well.
I'm chuckling a little bit when you use the word language, because I was personally acquainted with this Bergendorf fella. And the last time I visited him, I think it was the last time I visited him before he himself had to move into skilled care. So he was about 99, maybe 100 by then. And in his apartment, he had a book on a little desk next to his recliner. And I could not make out what the language was in it. So I asked him about it. So at the ripe young age of 100, he was reading Christian source material, scripture, in Aramaic.
Oh boy.
Right? So I was like, that's the kind of guy he was, though. Okay. So, but this is going to be, when will this come online, this new program?
It'll be next fall.
Okay.
Well, I guess this fall. Oh, sorry. It'll
that's
be this
right.
fall.
That's all right. I love an animated conversation.
I know my hands are moving.
That's all right.
It'll be this 2026.
Fall. We're in 2026 now.
Yeah, I know. Fall of 2026.
Yeah. And then, of course, whenever plans hit realities, there'll be opportunities for new things and that sort of stuff.
That's right.
What else is going on across the system? Because you are community service says, emphasis on the plural. What other kinds of initiatives are you guys engaged in right now?
We are always, I mean, we have home visiting, which helps our families, you know, we take families that are in the community who maybe not want to put their children in childcare.
Yeah.
And they still want to have some supports. Mm-hmm. We're able to do that as well. We are always looking for entrepreneurs who want to open family childcare. Because we have a grant from Department of Human Services that are looking to do some more expansion for night weekend care.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, when we think about economic drivers, we want to have people who are working in second and third shift care. We have some grant dollars to help support people who want to do that as well, because that is really important as to help drive the economy.
Sure, sure. I didn't know about that thing to help with the... in-home, get new providers and practitioners involved. That's fascinating. What's been happening right now, and it's not conclusive because it's being challenged in the courts, but the federal government has, or at least the president, has decided that there are states that are run by people he doesn't like that have been targeted to have their funds supporting child early child education pulled. One of those states is Illinois because the president doesn't like our governor. And it's so capricious that the courts, I think, are intervening. But is that having an impact at this point, tentatively?
We just received two pieces that happened last week. We received information from DAR funder that said right now funding is okay. And then last night, the court ruled they put a pause on on the funding. So the federal government freeze. So we're okay.
Put a pause on the freeze.
Correct.
Okay.
So we're still okay.
So we'll continue to hope that that is the case because, I mean, as capricious and infantile as it is, it's a terrible tragedy that the worst victims are infants themselves.
Correct. You know? Yeah. Right.
So, but I don't want to get lost in too many political things here. It's just, it's amazing how rapidly this news cycle just keeps cycling.
I know. Yeah. Because it really is about how do we get people back to work? How do we keep people at work? And that is really the thread that we want to pull on.
Right, right.
I mean, because early care and education, because if people aren't working, then people aren't putting taxes back into the rolls. And we want to make sure that everybody who is able to work and is doing that and the children are in care so that they're learning to be able to go back to, and be ready for kindergarten as well.
We're going to talk more about the economics of all this kind of thing and in terms of the economic benefits of this kind of thing in just a moment. But friends, as aforesaid, we are moving things around a little bit. So now Doc Tweets Rock Island Lines is coming after the bottom of the hour. I hope that doesn't offend anybody. It doesn't offend me any chance I get a chance to hear. Roll Tweet and Rock Island Lines. We'll be back in just a moment with my conversation with Marcy Mendenhall, CEO of SAL Community Services. Stay tuned.
This is Roll Tweet on Rock Island. Frequent visitors to Rock Island have noticed a peculiarity along the Upper Mississippi Valley. The towns on the west bank are grander than those across the river on the east. East St. Louis lives in the shadow of St. Louis and its Grand Arch. Upriver, Iowa on the west has Keokuk, Fort Madison, Burlington, while Illinois on the east has Warsaw, New Boston, and four crossroads with gas stations. Here at Rock Island, Davenport, Iowa is larger than the Illinois towns of Rock Island and Moline put together. It's the same all the way. East Dubuque is no match for Dubuque, and Minnesota's twin cities are not twins at all. St. Paul is elegant and filled with grand old homes, but it's sleepy, while Minneapolis to the west is the get-up-and-go town that banked the money, milled the Midwest wheat, and sent the railroads across the landscape. Why is this so? Perhaps it's because the West has always been larger than life in America, not just another direction. Westward, the course of empire takes its way, wrote Bishop Barclay. At least in the Mississippi Valley, people seem to have followed Horace Greeley's advice to go west, young man, go west. Here's one interesting theory proposed by early critics of Mark Twain. They were trying to prove that growing up along the river deprived Twain, like Huck Finn, of civilization. These critics suggested that two kinds of people left the civilized and cultured comforts of New York, Boston, and Philadelphia. The entrepreneurs with big dreams who went to follow their stars, and the sorry riffraff who couldn't handle the Protestant work ethic or were running from the law. When these groups reached the Mississippi, so this theory goes, the hard-working dreamers accepted the challenge and crossed the great river to the other side, founding its towns, while the lazy riffraff just plain gave up, sighed, and settled along the east bank. This is not a popular theory in Illinois.
Rock Island Lines with Roll Tweet is underwritten by Augustana College, Rock Island, Illinois.
And if programs like Rock Island Lines and, you know, that other local stuff that you enjoy, I hope you enjoy, are important to you, then the reason we're able to air it is because folks just like you have gone over to WVIK.org and made a pledge of support using that lovely donate button. So if you'd like to keep programs like this one around and Rock Island Lines included, we hope you'll either renew or establish membership in this particular radio station. My guest this week is Marcy Mendenhall, the CEO of SAL Community Services, and it is more than just the Skip Wonderful Early Childhood Learning Centers. But Marcy, I wanted to run this by you. Jared Bernstein had a piece in the New York Times this week. He's a former federal economist. And he talked about, you know, everyone's using the word affordability. It means different things to different people, but just at the level of making the economy work for more people,
right,
I think is the best definition for this. He says there's four ideas that you can use. And I'll bury the lead. The number two happens to be increased supply of affordable housing. Number three is capping healthcare costs. Number four is expanding clean energy so that our utility bills are not so crazy.
His
number one solution, providing young parents with the resources to afford quality childcare. And there's a lot in those words. It's not about, like you said, babysitting.
Right.
So what are the kind of things that we can be doing if we're ever communicating with our elected officials or anybody else like that, talking about how this benefits not just adorably cute little kids,
right,
but our whole flipping economy?
Right. I think there's a lot of things that you can be talking to your legislators about. Is first, just fund early care and education. Mm-hmm. That would be, there's both on Iowa and Illinois, there's a funding for CCAP, Child Care Assistance Program, increase funding there. There's also a level of funding of how much of the federal poverty level you can do as well, so you can adjust that. So we want to afford to make that more accessible for people. You could do that as well. And I also think there is just getting involved in the community. Come on to nonprofit boards, mm-hmm, to make sure that you're advocating for children and families, because that is a way that we can start moving the needle. The Quad City has a great backing for early care and education. We just have to continue to make sure that that stands in front of it. I know that the United Way is a great backer of early care and education. The Chamber is. We need to make sure that early care and education continues to be a milestone at every legislative event, so that it doesn't go into the back burner just because people know it works, but we need to make sure it continues to be at the front of the conversation. But it really is about funding.
Mm.
And, you know, people will say, oh, it's as expensive as going to college. It is, because we don't have additional state funding for people who can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we bring in state supported funds to have more expansion, so more accessibility?
Yeah.
So that's where we need to have more either federal or state support.
Right. And you touched on this. You navigate something very interesting in that you have two state ecosystems that you need to work in.
Yes.
You talked about there's 700 very fortunate kiddos. How is that split up between the two states, and how do you approach the two states, Des Moines and Springfield, differently?
We do it very carefully, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In our Iowa campus, we have about 150 kiddos.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest that we serve in Illinois. Mm. Illinois just has a different approach. They are more maybe holistic about how, and they have more programming around how we help support kiddos. In our Iowa campus, we are focused on serving families that are more FOFI.
Mm-hmm.
So we just have two different approaches on how we do that.
Mm-hmm.
United Way really helps support our Iowa campus as well, to making sure it's more affordable.
Yeah.
Because Iowa does not provide the level of support that Illinois does on bringing down the cost of care.
Yeah. I know we've been focusing on kids, but let's talk about the other areas that SAL is involved in.
Yeah.
That are anything else you want to share with us?
Yeah, I would say in our new campus for Rock Island, we are also with Friendship Manor. So we have our beautiful building.
Mm.
We have our intergenerational. But part of that is we're working on building our Friendship neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Friendship Manor and SAL, we are doing a lot of collaborative work as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be making our lunches and bringing it over to us. They're going to be doing our yard work, our snow removal, and those pieces as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we really have this great vibe with them that It's really a neighborhood feel.
Right. And you've got Olivet Baptist Church right across the street. That's a wonderful community anchor that's been there for a long time.
And when we, with Olivet, we did a, when we were doing our pre-planning, we knew we didn't have enough parking spaces. And so we went to them and we said, hey, would you be willing to, if we purchase some of your land, can we use your parking lot? And we were able to do that. So we have bought some parking. So they are able to use the parking lot, our parking lot during their Sunday services. And we're able to use their parking lot during the weekday for our staff and for family. So again,
didn't that work out nicely?
Right, exactly. Yeah? So we're really trying to take this corner off 11th Street and really make it more useful for a community and to build this up so that it is a benefit for the entire region.
And then you've got an amazing program called Holy Grinds, which is down the block, and Rock Island High School is right up on top of the hill there. So there's all kinds of opportunities. This is really amazing.
It is. And we are just trying to make sure that how are we intentional, and how are we trying to build things in, not for our families, for our children, but for our staff as well.
Yeah. One of the things that's kind of difficult nowadays is that we've seen such degradation in local media, and it's hard. You used to just say, well, keep an eye on things in the paper, but that's even harder to do now, just due to a lot of fiscal realities. But if people want to stay abreast of what's going on in terms of early childhood development, in the Quad Cities, well, let's say at the micro, meso, and macro levels.
Thank you.
Take it out to the street. how can I do that? I mean, I imagine one thing is you guys probably have a website.
Yeah, come on in. www.salcommunityservices.org. Go to there. There's a donate button if you're interested in that, but you could also then get out
Did you get that idea from public radio?
I did.
No. Universal.
And then you could also sign up for our newsletter as well. But those are great resources as well. But there's just so much that it's always just happening. Mm-hmm. You know, this last week things were very popping, but we also have social media as well that you can link on there through that website as well.
What are you looking forward to? And I ask that very openly because first I would say professionally and organizationally, but I also want to know what you personally are looking forward to.
Well, I made a 26 for 26 list.
Get out.
I do.
That is so organized.
I know. I have one personally, and then my husband and I have one as a couple as well. So I have a 26.
Hey, can we give a shout out to that husband of yours?
Matt
Medjanov. He's also involved in a million amazing things.
He's a fabulous, fabulous partner.
Yes, he is.
He is. So we have a 26 for 26 list, which just has, you know, fun things on there, but also, you know, silly things. I want to get a new purse, but I also want to swim across the Mississippi River.
Say what now?
Yeah. That's
what I want you to be careful about
that. Exactly.
Where are you going to do this?
I don't know.
Okay.
Corps of Engineers. I'll be calling you soon.
Well, I've had a couple of friends do that, and it's an easy way to get in a lot of trouble. These guys were very, very experienced swimmers, but please talk to some folks before you do that.
Exactly. But also my 2026 is to practice just at the Y.
There you go.
People are going over there.
That's so cool. Yeah. 26 or 20, I might have to steal that one.
Yeah, and so it is. It's just it's not resolutions, but it's things to check off the list about things that I want to do. Another thing is just to do something that scares me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because sometimes you just get in a rut and you don't do anything. And, you know, sometimes the fear stops you from doing things. Mm. And so I'm going to read 40 books this year, you know, so I've got I'm actually going to call the FFA this year to try to figure out how to get my pilot license back.
Way to go.
Yeah.
Well, that is really cool. So, the last word you would ever have used to describe me at the age of 21 was perspicacious. Ooh. But the most perspicacious thing I did in my spring term at Augustana College was realizing that there are certain things you can do only with the excuse of being a college kid.
Yes.
I made a list for the spring quarter of everything I wanted to do while I still had the excuse. And heavens forbid that ever sees the light of day. But so I get what you're going through. You got to have something to aim for,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And it doesn't have to be stressful. Like finding new kitchen knobs is on there, you know?
So, I get that.
But things that you've always wanted to do, but then you just don't get it done. There's like people I want to see that, you know, you can see them. And I'm like, we're going to get together. And then life happens.
Well, my spouse and partner is an inveterate list maker.
Oh.
So I can't handle that. No, no, that's too much.
No.
One list a year, I'm okay with. Kind of aim for. Because I fail miserably. Speaking of, well, before we do any more looking forward, I want to get your take. Have you been reading anything interesting? Have you been seeing any cool media? What's been filling your mind?
My mind, I had to write it down, Book of Alchemy. It's a creative practice of her an inspired life. It's a journal book. Hmm. And it really was inspired out of COVID.
Hmm.
And it's just one page a day. It's usually you read it and then you write it. It's a journal book. I love it.
Cool.
It's been really helpful.
What about any movies or anything like that?
The new Knives Out, we watched that. That was fabulous. I know we were talking about that earlier, but that was good.
Okay. If you haven't seen the Knives Out movies, friends, by all means, see them. If you do, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to give anything away, but feel free. In fact, why don't we use this email address that we've got? It's sml@wvik.org, Saturday Morning Live, sml@wvik.org. Tell me your rank order of the three Knives Out movies.
That's a good one.
Or any other movie tips. Any others for you, Marcy?
Let's see. We watched The New Pit last night. Did you watch The New Pit?
Okay. I really have to get into that. My wife is obsessed.
Yes.
In part because our son-in-law is an ER doc.
Ooh.
And he says everybody gets it wrong, but this gets it as close as anybody's ever gotten it.
Good.
So that's from an ER doc. And then I heard that on some interview someplace else that it's being praised for its authenticity. But, and I mean, who doesn't like Noah Wiley?
I know.
Like, come on.
I know. He's great.
Jeez, it almost makes me sick. He's so likable.
I know. Now, do you ever listen to Amy Poehler on her?
No, you know, I don't do podcasts.
What?
Isn't that terrible?
No, it's not terrible.
I mean, I create one incidentally. This show becomes a podcast, not through anything of myself. It's all automated. But I don't get into those that much. I listen when I'm working out in the morning. I listen to Up First from NPR.
For sure.
Because I think it's important to stay informed as a citizen.
Yes.
But that's about it. But you would recommend Amy. I do love her comedy, Amy Poehler.
Funny. Oh,
last night, Jenny and I watched a couple of years old stand-up. We love stand-up.
Yes.
Wanda Sykes.
Oh, funny.
Oh, man.
Funny.
Oh, man.
We need to have some joy.
We need joy. And her ability to weave tragedy and joy in the same bit is just unbelievable. I have no idea how she does it, but she does it.
Yeah.
So any other recommendations while we still have a minute or two left?
Not at this point. What about for you? What's keeping your brain healthy and going moving forward?
Thank you for that. It's interesting that you know, I'm the number of seasons. I mean, you work in a college, and the seasons mark everything, right? And you go through a cycle every year. And I think I'm at the point now where it's a fair bet that I've got less than one hand's worth of cycles, right? No, and which I'm very excited about.
Yeah.
But honestly, one of the things I'm concerned about, I've been in the same organization long enough and in the same community that I've watched a lot of people head towards gradually the barn door, right? And there are ways to do it well and ways to do it poorly. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to phone anything in. How's that?
Yeah.
So that's kind of negative. I got to work on turning that into a positive of what I don't want to do versus what I do want to do.
Yeah.
But hey, you asked. That's see what right. happens?
I read The Audition. Did you read The Audition?
No.
Interesting book.
Do you know the author offhand? Okay, The Audition. Well, I'm writing these down.
Okay.
Book of Alchemy and The Audition. Oh, Marcy Mendenhall, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you for asking. This was great.
Well, I knew it was going to be because it's Marcy Mendenhall.
It's Kai Swanson.
So, friends, that's going to do it for this week. Once again, thanks to my guest, Marcy Mendenhall, CEO of SAL Community Services, for being with us today. Quick check of the forecast. All the snow should be out of here by now. There is another chance for snow, though, after 2 p.m. Not much of an accumulation. Our high today is only going to reach about 37. Tomorrow, 33. Then, here we go again, Monday, 45, Tuesday, 50, but then back into more seasonable temperatures. Whatever, we hope you're along for the ride. Now, coming up on WVIK, it's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And please be sure to join us next week when our guest will be a good friend of the program, Jerry Jones from the MLK Center in Rock Island. And if you'd like to hear a recent program, you can always stream full episodes at wvik.org. From the campus of Augustana College, this is Kai Swanson inviting you to join us next week for Saturday Morning Live, Portions Recorded. Stay tuned. News and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me are just around the corner.